Right, this is Pure Decking number 29 for what the hell is today?
Today would be the 12th of July.
Tuesday or something.
Tuesday, July 12th.
Happy the 12th, everybody.
2025. Anyways.
Tuesday, the most randomly selected day.
Whatever. So anyways, got with us today. We've got the Heavy, we've got the Knox, and we have a Suave Lemon. Hi, guys.
Hey, how's it going?
All right, and I'm Morbs. Forgot to introduce myself again. And
yeah.
I think the Skype channel is just a hair hot. Hang on a second. Okay, I think that's a little bit better. Heavy, you were the loudest. Say something.
All right. It's Tuesday.
Good enough.
The day before we start the anniversary of... yeah, there we go.
The anniversary. What are we talking about?
150th anniversary of First Manassas is this weekend.
Ah, cool. So, anyways, just some programming notes here. We're going to be changing the schedule of Pure Decking. This Thursday is going to be 30 shows. That's a nice round number. We've been doing this since late March, believe it or not. And I'm actually surprised. This is the longest running of my attempts at starting another show. And it hasn't died.
No, this is a pretty good one, I'd say.
It's been fun. And but two days a week and I have nothing on the weekends has been a little bit more time consuming than I had initially planned on. So I'm going to back the show off to once a week.
Okay.
Good news though for you listeners who like Knox, he will be on Thursdays doing 1 hour of live yodeling. So if for those of you folks that enjoy that kind of stuff, come on to Galaxy 15 Radio.
Knox, you are welcome to the time
oh,
slot.
You're the one who saw that video. Okay.
Yeah. That said, so anyway, so we're gonna take the Tuesday time slot and we're gonna move it back to 9 o'clock. That's just to try to make it a little bit easier on some of my guests. And the Thursdays is going to be Newsreel, Hugo's Newsreel. So the other reason we're going to take the Tuesday time slot and back off to once a week is so we don't step on Newsreel, because we've gone long before, although last week they started late anyways, so whoop-dee. But just, you know, in the future, as things starting to tighten up with them, and as, you know, we've had technical issues in the past, and they're probably going to be continuing as we do more with Second Life again. So... just to be on the safe side, I'm going to back off to once a week. We're not going to conflict with Hugo. And I am probably going to take the show in a little bit different direction. You know, as much as I enjoy talking about pen testing and hacking and all that, and, you know, I'll probably still hit a couple of news stories here and there, but this is not supposed to be a news show. This is not supposed to be a current event show. It's supposed to be a cyberpunk show, so I'm going to try to take it back in that direction. That way these guys aren't sitting there going, yeah, uh-huh, whatever, when I'm talking about some of this crazy-ass stuff. And, you know, I'm going to pull up a bunch of pen testing tools today, so I'm sure we'll get some of that. But, however, since we did move... This raises a fun question, though. Since we did move IHN back to Second Life, what should we do with the old OS Grid server? I mean,
yeah, I was thinking about that.
It's a nice box. Know. It's sitting on a good pipe. I don't particularly want to advertise the IP address, so...
Could we keep at least a voice Mumbles client going on it?
No, I could... if I was going to put... Yeah, I mean, I could take the hacked-up Murmur client off of it and put a real Mumble client or TeamSpeak or something like that.
That wouldn't be a bad idea, because then we'll have good backup for when Skype totally bites the dust... since Microsoft took it over.
Well, I have been getting more and more frustrated with Skype here lately.
Yeah.
Didn't Vendrilo do push-to-talk? I know TeamSpeak can.
Yeah, I think they all can. Like, I was even using push-to-talk on Mumble.
On Mumble? Okay. Well, maybe we'll just stick with Mumble then, because I think that's got a client for everything. So,
yeah, that's true.
I'll explore that a bit. So, and I thought the sound quality on the last Mumble server was good. So, if the newer versions are any better, then I'll take it. So,
yeah. Well, getting distracted here, but I do miss the days when mics had keys.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Awkward silence. Anyways. So, somebody's going to clip that out. That awkward silence is going to come back to haunt me, like, you know, years from now. I'll be sitting somewhere and that'll be a ringtone. Yeah. Just like, oh, God.
No, it'll be a gesture and it'll be spread all over Second Life. And
hey, I'm cool with that. I'm screaming into a microphone how many times a week right now? Like, I care if my voice is on the internet.
That's exactly where it is. I think I've used the term unelectable several times. So, you know, at this point.
Well, you know, as if my opinions in politics wouldn't already do that. But that's that aside. So, anyways, though, first event, something we ought to talk about here. This is a fun story from CNET. Apparently, the Department of Justice is trying to force somebody to decrypt their computer for them. They're saying that this is not a Fifth Amendment issue because they're not asking for her password. They're asking her to decrypt the laptop.
It's still a Fifth Amendment issue, but
it's self-incrimination.
I consider it sort of reasonable.
Well, in the article, the woman in question is being charged with bank fraud. So, first and foremost, it's not a kiddie porn case. We don't have to go into that shit. it's bank fraud. But I still think that's Fifth Amendment, isn't it? I mean...
Well, it's testimonial. You're like, okay, you know, instead of your encryption being between your...
compelled to divulge your personal financial records, and if that's the information there...
It's a matter of just determining what is hardware. You know, your brain is essentially your heart is a piece of hardware that has, you know, an interface between your mouth and the brain. You know, it's the same thing between the password and your hard drive encryption. It is no different in the law. So you could just argue that it's a biological computer versus a mechanical one.
Well, it's not even. See, they're trying to get around that because several lower courts have ruled that passwords fall under Fifth Amendment because you cannot be compelled to give oral testimony against yourself. So they're not asking for the password. They're saying you can keep your password to yourself, but you have to decrypt this laptop for us. And I've actually got a quote I pulled out of the article here, or I've got a section of the article. I've got a couple of sections because there's some good ones here out of this article. It's a good read. It's on CNET. That link is going to be hard to do in audio, but just go on CNET, look for DOJ, we can force you to decrypt that laptop. It's a good article, it's a good read. Go ahead,
Swap. What's to stop you from just saying, oh, I'm sorry, I forgot my password?
Nothing. I mean, I don't know that they would believe you, but it's like...
Yeah, but there's not much they can do about it.
It's like, I don't know the password.
You get on the stand...
Are they
going to
waterboard
stand.
You?
They might.
Yep. Well, you get on the stand just like every other politician. I do not recall. I do not recall. I do not recall. And just repeat that ad infinitum.
Even better, put in a password to decrypt it and just make sure it's always off by one letter or something like that, or just a different password and say, oh, you know, I must have gotten them confused.
Well, if you were sufficiently paranoid, you have the 10 tries and it erases itself.
Well, and we talked about TrueCrypt in the past, and I don't know that this is TrueCrypt. It didn't say, but you know, TrueCrypt has other methods too of giving them a false password and having it, you know, I don't know, show pictures of puppies or something. But the actual chunk of the article here that I thought was pretty interesting. Much of the discussion has been about what analogy comes closest. So, in other words, they're only working on this from a standpoint of analogies. They're not even talking about it in terms of what it actually is. Prosecutors tend to view PGP passphrases akin to someone possessing a key to a safe filled with incriminating documents. That person can, in general, be legally compelled to hand over the key. And that would be like a warrant saying, we're going to search the safe, you have to give us access to it.
Right.
Other examples include the U.S. Supreme Court saying defendants can be forced to provide fingerprints, blood samples, or voice recordings. I didn't know that. Mm-hmm. I'm not a lawyer, so I'm not surprised I didn't know that, but I didn't know that they could compel you to give this shit over.
Right.
You know, especially because on, you know, I don't, because this is such a great example. But you know, every time you see a law show on TV, they're always like, "Oh, well, we have to get the DNA properly." You know, they got he has to give it away or whatever.
You know, like generally, they can't just go up to anybody and compel you to give that over. They have to have a good reason for it.
Well, they got to get a warrant, right?
If you signed to California for your California driver's license, they can take a blood sample right there.
That's
It's what it is exactly in most of the driver's license. If you refuse a breathalyzer test, you're basically giving up your license by doing it, which is fine. You can choose to not get the, you know, essentially get incriminate yourself by drunk driving by saying, "Well, I choose not to drive for a year."
Hey, Knox, you're awfully quiet on the line. Can you turn yourself up any?
Well, I can try here. Let's see.
All right. Well, while Knox is doing that, the other quote in the article that I really liked, this was from it was a quote by the EFF guy, because it's a good observation. "Decrypting the data on the laptop can be, in general and of itself, a testimonial act, revealing control over a computer and the files on it," said EFF senior staff attorney Marcia Hoffman. Ordering the defendant to enter an encryption password puts her in a situation the Fifth Amendment was designed to prevent, having to choose between incriminating herself, lying under oath, or risking contempt of court. Which I think that's true. I think that was the point of the Fifth Amendment, was so that you didn't have to, I mean, you're not supposed to bear witness against yourself and saying, "You have to decrypt this laptop for us." I don't see how that's not.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, how's my mic now?
That's better. So we'll go with it. Actually, I think mine's a little quiet on the waveform too, but that's okay. Because I keep getting louder and not louder. So I don't know. We got to keep an eye on this one because if it comes down that they can order you to decrypt your stuff. It's not like Britain's law where it's like, you know, what is the password? I don't want to give you the password. Fine, you're going to jail for 5 years. Or is it 5 years? I don't remember what it is now. I know Britain, they can compel you. It's a crime to not give a government official your password if they ask you for it.
Right.
Yep.
So I don't think it's quite like that. But if they can say, no, you have to decrypt this laptop, you might want to consider, you know, the thermite switch. I have to get on the. Yeah, I'll have to ask the agent how to build one of those. He's good at that kind of crap.
You know, like we always have all these high tech solutions and everything, and you can always just go the low tech solution. Like those micro SD cards, they are so tiny. You could like make a slit in your skin and like hide it under your skin or something. Well, you know, that's a bad example, but you know, like anywhere you could possibly imagine, you can hide these things.
Going straight for the macabre.
They're so tiny, you could just snap it between thumb and forefinger.
Well,
Jesus.
That's true right there. I mean, if you think you're going to jail and you were smart and you kept all your stuff on a thumb drive or SD card, pop the fucker in the microwave.
Yeah.
Oops, I thought it was a casserole. I mean, I don't know. Come up with some bullshit reason. Just pop it in the microwave, throw it in the trash, snap it in half so it's not recoverable, and problem solved.
Well, you know, they may get you for destroying evidence there, but, you know, you just have some, like, put a bit of jam on the bottom of a plate, stick it to the jam, and make it look like you set the plate down on a table, and then put the plate in the microwave.
Hang on, Suave, you deserve something for that one.
Toasty!
There you go.
This is for a future episode, potentially, if we want to, you know, mention it or something. You could have multiple boot up username and password, and then just one of them boots into Boot Nuke. Just run.
I like that one, too.
But that's not what normally happens when I start my computer.
Yep, that's normal. That is absolutely normal. Oh, muffin. So,
produce smoke is what it's supposed to do, right?
Yep, it just let the magic smoke out. Sorry, guys. That said, though, you probably shouldn't be doing bank fraud in the first place. You know, don't give them a reason to search your laptop like committing horrible crimes and stealing people's money. Just a thought.
Also, though it's easier to do it while keeping records, maybe you shouldn't.
just exactly. Don't keep the records. I like that. Just, you know, maybe you just shouldn't write that down.
You know, you keep the cooked books, but you don't keep the raw books there. The undoctored books.
Well, but if you're not keeping the real books, how are you going to properly do your taxes? Oh, I gotcha.
Yeah.
Okay. Moving on. So last week was the last space shuttle launch.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm sorry to all you people that put a live space launch on your bucket list. You're pretty much fucked.
oh, no. There's still all kinds of space launches. You're just not going to get to watch a shuttle.
Well, that's what I'm saying. No space shuttle.
Didn't Iran send a monkey up or something like that? Or they were going to? Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah, they were going to.
So,
I am glad we finally got rid of that fucking dog of a program. I mean, I know we had to have something.
The problem with it is like, yeah, it's good they got rid of it. It was a total hog of resources and everything like that. But, you know, now that they've gotten rid of it, instead of, like, putting those resources to something better, they just cut the funding. So, really, it doesn't help NASA in any way whatsoever.
I don't know if you noticed, but we're broke.
Absolutely. Oh, but, guys spend, like, 10 times more than NASA's entire budget on air conditioning tents in Afghanistan.
You know, he's probably right about that one. Look, now, I've personally said if you want to go
there, 50% of the world's military budget.
Yeah.
The world's.
I would agree. There's some other things I would have liked to have seen receive budget cuts before NASA. You know, actually, they just passed an insanely expensive healthcare bill. If you want to go the politics route, we could cut that and fund NASA. Hey, or we could cut defense and fund NASA. Or hey, you know, they should have gotten some results after 10 years. I was all for the war, to be honest. Okay, yeah, if you haven't figured it out yet, I am right wing. And I was all for the war, but holy shit, we should have gotten some more results by now than that.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
So, you know, there's patriotism, then there's, guys, what are you doing?
I just want to say that, you know, if we get into, you know, one of the companies that's doing really good, SpaceX, they're projecting a third the cost of what NASA was able to do.
Yeah.
In the notes here, we've got, you know, I've got some just things here that I had thrown in for conversation. I didn't think we were actually going to need them. But it's like, this could open the door to private or commercial exploration of space.
Mm-hmm.
It could also just be the end of the United States adventuring in space. So,
you know, like, NASA itself is actually, it's great for coming up with all kinds of inventions that you would have even expected that are actually great money makers.
Yep.
Like shoe insoles or memory foam or like ear thermometers. Like
the fucking microwave.
Thousands and yeah, exactly. There's thousands and thousands of things that we use every day that wouldn't be here without NASA.
Yeah.
And they're going to be able to continue to do their science. They've actually got some good ideas for. One of the things they're going to be able to do is basically whenever there's open space on an actual rocket launch, they're going to be able to throw some basic components on there and run them up. And that's one of the ideas they're coming up with is basically just fill it with.
They're going to hitchhike on China.
Well, they're going to hitchhike on China and Russia. That's right. Now think about this, though, too. That means think of the cost increase we're going to have now until we have a commercial company doing this. At throwing satellites up, that's going to be a problem.
Well, satellites have been going up by private air rocket for a while now. The Russian Energia Corporation was basically a whole bunch of Russian rocket scientists from the 50s who basically made a company and started throwing rockets, satellites up. So that's not a big deal.
Yeah, but do we have any American companies doing that?
They are.
They are? I haven't seen anything on it.
They're
based in Russia.
Oh, well.
Well, no. I'm saying you say American companies, but they're over here. They build the rockets here, and then they actually launch from the U.S.
Okay,
we've got a lot of the facilities. And then there's
our air pollution laws don't cover rockets. Got it.
Well, we also happen to have a lot of private, facilities for doing these kind of things too, because we used to launch a lot more rockets into space during the older programs. There's a lot of facilities that we didn't use anymore, so they come private.
We can convert any damn missile facility into a space launch facility.
That's what NASA was using, ballistic missiles.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, isn't that where, like, most of our missile technology actually came out of, was NASA?
Yeah.
It was military that they got those from.
Oh.
Yeah.
I thought NASA did a ton of improvement on them.
Yeah, they did, but...
Okay, okay.
The basic design that they're still using is the military design.
But so NASA is going to be able to continue to do their program. What they're basically doing is throwing the components up, and then they'll be able to throw a couple of modules, crew modules with some tools, mm-hmm. robotic arms, and assemble their projects in space.
Right.
So we're going to see them continuing anyway.
And you know, like I am a supporter of them not having to waste all kinds of money on these big, massive projects. Because, like, okay, yeah, they did do up a lot of the science and everything like that. But as far as actually building it, yeah, go private sector. Like, look at Bigelow Enterprises and their like inflatable space stations that have like four times the space and a quarter the launch cost of the space station modules right now.
Go ahead, Knox.
NASA is more than just a space program. It's also the aeronautics program doing mm-hmm. all the testing for airplane designs.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
They so, pretty much do for free.
Well, there's that. But, I mean, I have seen stuff about the budget of NASA being, like, again, you could just, you know, take like a percent of the defense budget. And, oh, there's NASA.
Yeah.
So it's just, it's really sad because I love the science. It's like, has this really made it that much harder for us to get to the stars now because they weren't able to replace the shuttles before the end of their useful life?
Well, that is a big issue, but you know, one of the biggest failings of NASA is failing to get the public interested in it again. Like back in the 60s when they were doing the moon program and everything, the entire country was just enraptured by this. And
well,
they
you had
needed
the whole space
to keep
race
that
going on too.
Oh yeah, but like they kind of just stopped trying to get the public's interest. Or stopped working very hard at it, or you know, they had somebody in charge of the PR department who sucked or something like that. And that really screwed them over because it never became an issue, the funding of NASA.
Yeah. Well, they've actually gotten better at it, at least in my mind. They've done these faster, better, more projects. Mm-hmm. The example would be the Mars rover. They sent two of them in case one of them failed on launch. They sent several... multiple cheap satellites to go do these asteroid investigations. Mm-hmm. And those projects have turned out to be, by and large, by percentage, a lot more successful than the more expensive projects.
Oh, absolutely. And those specific projects are probably what got people interested or has been getting people interested in NASA again. Because, like, who doesn't want to watch, an impactor smashing into a comet, you know, 100 million miles away from Earth?
Well, I'm also all for, you know, robots. Everyone loves robots.
Yeah. And smashing things.
And smashing things.
Exactly.
Absolutely. So, I don't know. Go ahead.
I was going to say reprogrammable. Reprogrammable. This is the point. You know, remotely we can sit there and basically just, you know, basically upload code, and this is where it comes back to peer decking. You've got the cyberpunk thing where these things are basically interchangeable, reprogrammable, modifiable. So basically they're hacking on the fly, which is awesome. Saying.
The Mars rovers were basically made out of off-the-shelf components. They weren't it's not like there was that much custom hardware in the damn things. They were essentially model cars with a PC on board.
Yeah. But, you know, they did it in such a way that it was so modifiable, like Heavy was saying there, where, like, you know, if a wheel breaks down or something, they can just easily upload the code, change how the wheels move a little bit, and away it goes, no problems whatsoever, just a little bit slower.
Weren't the two rovers originally designed to have a functional life of, like, 6 months, and we've got, like, 5 years out of the damn things?
Well,
yeah,
that was a minimal time. They really expected him to last longer.
Yeah, but it looks really good.
Like 2 years, not five.
Well, yeah.
But no, that's okay. It's okay that they over-engineer these sort of things.
Oh, I like the over-engineering. You know, overkill is not overkill. It is simply application of effort. So anyways, you know, it's not overkill. If you're not overkilling, you're just lazy. So anyways, anybody who plays Quake can tell you that.
I've got one more point on this privatization of space, and that is Kickstarter. Okay, there used to be these private, you know, Kickstarter events when we were going across continents. You know, you'd have people saying, well, I want to be the first one to fly across the continent. A lot of dudes died. You know, same thing for circumnavigating the planet. I think you're going to start seeing that just for the... Can you imagine a person putting together a rocket just to say they were the first man on Mars and plant their flag? There's going to be people to do that.
I'll give them $20.
Oh, sure. Oh, sure. I'm down for that. I'm very much down for that. I just don't I just want to see the specifications before I get on the rocket myself. Yeah. So I can just see the backyard rednecks. Yep, this will work. Sir, I think your rocket's made out of old oil drums. It'll be fine. Is that a fishbowl and a garden hose? Yep, it'll be good.
But, you know, like a Kickstarter would actually be a perfect application for that sort of thing. Because, you know, you could even have like a tiered payment system where the more you pay, the more you get. Like, you know, let's say you pay, I don't know, like $100,000 or something like that. You get a name on a plaque that's actually going to be sent to Mars. Or if you pay like, you know, $100, you get your name on an SD card that's going to be over there. You know, so on and so forth.
That's actually how NASA did a few of their satellites there.
Yeah, I think they have funded stuff like that in the past.
I know that they've done that sort of thing for free, for putting names on SD cards and stuff like that, but I'm not sure if NASA's ever actually asked for donations for that sort of service.
But it doesn't even have to be like, I'm doing the whole project from rocket all the way up on your own. You could say, I have bought space on this SpaceX rocket, and then my module is going to launch. So that would be kind of cool.
Okay.
Oh, absolutely.
So, anyways, so we'll have to, hopefully we'll get something good out of it. Right now, it looks like we're hitching rides with the Russians until something gets off the ground. So, anyways, though, just a quick story here before the music break, and I do have some interesting music for us for our break. One more fun one, and you'll notice a complete lack of names in this, because I don't want to advertise. Max Security Firm has shipped its first ever iPhone malware scanner, but here's the bitch of the thing. It doesn't actually scan the phone. They've got an antivirus they put out for the iPhone, and it's in the App Store, and it can't actually scan the phone because of the sandbox everything is in on an iPhone. So it'll scan your Dropbox folder and your email attachments.
Well...
But it's only scanning for Windows viruses.
Something like that, yeah.
From what I understand, yeah.
What were you trying to say, Knox?
Well, pretty much that's what most of your antiviruses do already.
True. But in this case, I think it's more trying to prevent your iPhone and iPad from spreading Windows malware, like a Typhoid Mary.
Yeah. So... I'm actually looking at it from the point of view of a person who has a phone that does scan the SD card, and it is a pain in the ass when you actually start the phone up. It's about another 3-minute delay on boot. Basically, I can understand why they won't allow it to scan the phone, because now you've got your iPhone that's beautiful and wonderful, smooth interface, and it's like, okay, you have to wait now because your phone's still booting and scanning.
How often do you actually reboot your phone?
Yeah, I've probably done it like once this year.
I reboot my phone daily.
Oh, all right.
Well, that's okay. So
I have a lot of crap installed on my phone. If I actually wanted to go clean it up and reinstall everything again, and trim it down to a few apps, then it would probably run much better. But
is that why you sound like shit whenever you call into Skype from the thing?
It's got, like,
well, I'm actually going in. You laugh, but I have a BitTorrent client on there. I'm in there furiously shutting down processes when I'm trying to get you guys online with that thing, and it's like, okay.
All right. Well, that said, it is time for our break, so let me just mute the Skype call here while I intro this song. Too many windows. Here we go. This is a track from Broken Kites. Parameter Reallocation is the track. Got it off Jamendo. This is track number 2, Mechanize, and it is chiptune. So... We'll be right back. Everybody loves a little bit of good chiptune. Everybody back?
Yep.
Oh, yeah.
That's all awesome right. stuff, man. Awesome stuff.
Hey, everybody loves chiptune.
Uh-huh. Except for them so-called audiophile people.
Oh, those audiophile yeah. people can get the hell over it. I enjoy it. So, I will be playing more chiptune on the station, especially if one of my other projects takes off the ground. So, mm-hmm. that aside, and we're going to be playing some more off that album for the closer. Their track number 12, Method, was what we'll close the show out with. So, anyways, though, just a real quick roundup, some tools I came across in my day job, and I found them to be quite handy. First and foremost up, we have a meta search engine for exploits and vulnerabilities. It searches Nessus, ExploitDB, CERN, CVE. It's got a bunch of search engines that it goes through. It's just exploitsearch.net. This is awesome if you need to, check and see if something's got a hole in it.
You know, I kind of wish that it did search CERN for exploits in the fabric of the universe.
Yeah.
That would just be awesome.
I don't know why I said CERN. Whoops. So, anyways.
That's pretty cool. Although it definitely makes it a lot easier for people who don't know what they're doing to be more damaging.
You know, and I've had that conversation with people before about talking about this stuff, and especially with regard to the Agent Paranoia videos producing those things, that... Do you make this easier for people, or should you, you know, do like the anti-sec people want and bury it and make it hard to find? And as far as I'm concerned, somebody who really wants to do this stuff, they're going to figure it out. I mean, that's how this stuff all starts, is people screwing around with code. So...
I know I scare the piss out of people when I say I want the people, like LulzSec, to come out, burn themselves out, of course, and get, you know, busted. But I want them to come out and just start poking all these fucking lazy, cheap companies and say, fix your shit.
Do you think it wasn't happening before just because LulzSec was being very public about it? I mean, you think this stuff wasn't happening before and maybe we just weren't hearing about it?
I just want the public embarrassment. That's what I'm saying.
Oh, well.
Yeah, I want these companies to, you know, look like they actually have been, which is their pants are freaking down around their ankles and they're getting, the underwear ripped up around your ears. You know, it's like, look, guys, you've been screwing around for a while. Yeah, Sony, again. Jeez.
Has Sony been hacked this week? Shit. Yes. so,
yeah.
Anyways, another... not to get too far off topic here, another great website. Now, this has been around for a while, and I've come across it before, but I thought I would mention it on here because I made use of it today to check some things. ZeusTracker.abuse.ch. This thing is badass. You know, the Zeus botnet and Zeus variants are one of the biggest botnets out there. Not the biggest one at the moment. I'm blanking what the biggest one is. It's a newer one. But Zeus... especially because the source code for it has been out for a while, is a very prevalent bot kit and very dangerous. So one of the things I've been doing with Zeus Tracker is getting down a good list of the CNC servers from their site and then comparing that to my network logs, looking for any of my systems hitting Zeus systems.
Hmm.
So maybe not terribly useful for you guys, but it's also very interesting just to look at the number of the damn things out there. These are not the bots. These are the CNC channels.
Okay.
Yeah,
this is definitely... this is going to be kind of nifty, because I think this is going to... When the first AI emerges, a lot of it's going to be from this distributed virus technology, I'm pretty sure.
You've been watching the Terminator 3 movie one too many times, I think, Heavy.
Well, it's not going to be some military program, that's for damn sure. Those things never work right.
So... another quick tool I wanted to throw out here. I'm including this almost more for myself because I needed it the other day, couldn't find it, couldn't remember where it was, and then I found it today. It is a pair of programs by DigiNinja called Ear and Trumpet. And it's digininja.org, and it's under his project section. Ear and Trumpet is mapping firewalls. You put the ear behind the firewall. You run the ear on a computer behind the firewall. And then you run Trumpet on a computer on the other side of the firewall, and it will map your firewall what ports are open and which ones are not, at least with regard to those two machines.
That is awesome.
It's actually a really simple concept. It just, ear is a listener, and trumpet is just going to spam packets on all ports. I mean, it's a dead simple concept. But if you're trying to figure out, like, if something's in your way and you think it's a firewall, damn handy tool.
So you're using it in the reverse as well so that you can see what leaks your firewall has going outwards?
Oh, sure, yeah. Set up ear on a program outside, on a system outside of your firewall. Set up trumpet on the one inside of it. Run it. See what gets out. I mean, absolutely. And it's a small enough program. You just grab both and put them on both machines. It's no big deal. Extraordinarily handy thing to have.
Excellent, excellent. And then he's bringing this stuff up, and it's like, cool, I use this every day at work. You know, again, this gets back to the overarching topic of what is in your digital dojo. These things are light. I mean, come on, keep a copy around and keep them updated, and then just use it. Practice on the old boxes. They're available. You're going to be able to get 800 megahertz machines for a song if you look at the right places.
I had a buddy of mine after me because I was complaining the other day working on my lab about having to move all these boxes and shit around. He goes, well, just sell all your old shit and use the money to buy new shit. And it's like, I would. I really would. But I don't think I'd get $200 for all of these old machines or something.
Yeah, you could sell like everything in your lab and not have enough to buy one computer.
Well,
not your lab specifically.
I was looking at, as you suggested, I was looking at eBay at the old rack mount servers, and that's why I mentioned 800 megahertz, 1.6 gig.
Oh, yeah, those things go for nothing on there. Usually they don't have hard drives, but that's not that big of an issue. You can usually get drives for them, but you can live disk them, whatever.
When 2 terabyte drives cost $50, it's not a problem.
Oh, yeah. But, I mean, no, seriously, if you're looking to build a the only problem with the old rack mount stuff is the noise. So if you're going to do it, you know, you want to, I don't know, build it out in the garage or something and maybe build a little server rack out in the garage, temperature controlled, so you don't melt anything. But
I've got a fairly decent basement dry, you know, from Michigan, there you which go. Is odd, but, you know.
Yeah, that would work. I actually thought about building one in my attic, but it gets too hot up there. But, like, yeah, no, get on eBay. You can get old sun boxes. You can get... rack mount systems, especially if you can catch a data center when they're upgrading. Usually they're just trying to liquidate everything out of there so they don't have to store it, and they don't care if they're making back investment or not. You can get some sweet gear, especially if you if you just keep your ear to the ground for some local stuff. You know, you don't have to go through eBay. Go check Craigslist. If you catch a data center when they're upgrading, or a school when they're throwing out old gear or having a gear auction, you can get some nice stuff on the cheap.
Yep.
So... And I got one last tool here I wanted to throw out here. This is still in heavy development. It is brand new. Right now, it's essentially a password brooder, but it's going to be evolving. It's going to be a full-feature scanner. And yes, I've already tested this against the IHaveNothing.org site because I didn't think anyone care if I crashed it.
Right.
No response. I expected somebody to get angry at me for that, but no response. It's a WP scan. It is a WordPress scanner. It goes in.
I think everybody's too afraid to get angry at you.
No.
Well, it's not that. Suave keeps excellent backups, right, Suave?
Yeah.
We've dealt with those backups before, Heavy. Let's not go there. But this is at code.google.com, switch WP scan. And right now it is a full-featured password brooder. So you give it an account, give it a word list, and it will try to brute force a WordPress password. It also has some modes. I didn't get to play with it very much today, but it has some modes for identifying plugins on the site, and those were fairly accurate. It'll figure out what theme you're using, so if there's like a known hole in a theme. Really handy tool. When this thing gets a little bit more advanced, it's going to be one of those things where you just run on your site periodically after updating it.
Yeah.
So anyways, into the meat of the second half of the show, something I thought would be fun. I recently jailbroke my iPhone, so let's talk about jailbreaking phones.
Awesome.
And I think I went to like, I'm blanking on the URL now. I went to like jailbreakmyphone.com or something like that. You know, it uses a PDF exploit. Now, the scary part about that is I jailbroke my iPhone 4 in a bar talking to a friend of mine because he was showing me some of the stuff he got, and he set me up with some very specific repositories. Which have some very fun stuff in them. So That said, though, I've got it jailbroken. I was working on getting Metasploit loaded on it today. But I jailbroke my phone in a bar talking to a buddy of mine. Now, here's the thing. If that website could jailbreak my phone when I wanted it to, what's to stop another website from doing it and then loading malware?
Absolutely nothing.
Nothing.
Yay. And the virus scanner for the iPhone doesn't work. So.
This gets back to one of the real problems with jailbreaking your phone is the viruses that have been written for the iPhone have been written because people have jailbroken their phones and created more exploits. So,
well, if you go read documents on doing pen tests and stuff, a lot of people are starting to exploit phones. They'll jailbreak the phone for you so they can load their stuff on it, which is why I mentioned using this website, which probably was not the greatest of ideas. Of course, I've already changed the root password. If you didn't know, the iPhone and iPod, any iOS, the root password is Alpine.
Yes.
That is how
dumb.
That's how the first malware for iPhone came out, is that it was just exploiting a known password because nobody thought to change it. And, your phone's always on. So it was an SSH
username
one.
Username is user.
And the password was password. Just fuck, how
like
did they guess
routers.
That?
you joke, but man. just
I know.
So yeah, like whenever you see a list of passwords that get hacked from somewhere that people throw out there, there's always, it's like 12345 for the username and 54321 for the password. It's like, really?
That's the most tried password on my SSH honeypot. I've seriously thought about setting up a VM and locking it down and letting, throwing that password on there just to see what they do when they get in there. But the problem with defending is you have to be perfect. On attacking you, all you have to do is find one chink and you're in. On defense, if you miss a chink, you're done, right?
Yeah.
So that's why everyone wants the red team. Nobody wants the blue team. Sorry.
Exactly.
So anyways, back to jailbreaking. Now, I've of course been having the eye crap. Anyways, but you all are more privy to the Android devices.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So I know you can root them. Is that even as necessary as it is on the iStuff?
It's not as necessary. There are some programs out there that require you to root, like some of the security programs that, for example, allow you to take control of access of your phone, take pictures and all that sort of stuff from your home PC in case it gets stolen. In order to get a good one of those, you need to root your phone.
Okay.
The other reason for doing it is to have a really good quality way to tether your phone, essentially.
Well, that depends on who you get your phone from. Like I, the Canadian carrier I've got my phone with, both wired and wireless tethering just works perfectly.
I do know that Google's been working with the carriers because the carriers have been wanting to limit, at least in the States, they're wanting to limit the amount of tethering you can do.
Right.
Yeah. And that's the here's something that's creeping up that's going to be a problem. They're checking for jailbreaking now. Not to just shut down your phone, but when it comes to the Netflix app, for instance, they want to be able to use their encryption. And if they find that your phone's been jailbroken, then they're going to disallow you to use the Netflix app. So,
really?
Yeah.
I haven't heard that one. Now, I do know that the Blizzard Mobile Authenticator pitches a fit if you're on a jailbroken phone. It still works, but it says, this phone has been jailbroken, and we cannot guarantee the authentication of blah, 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 blah. So it's like they complain at you for it.
It authenticates anyway.
Well, to be fair, it does make your phone a little bit less secure. But generally, people who are jailbreaking their phones have good practices when they're using their devices.
I would contend that.
They're following a PDF
fair enough.
Found on Reddit.
Yeah, see, that's the thing.
Yeah, that's a good point.
I don't care to root my phone because I like to think I have a clue what I'm doing. You all might argue with me, but I like to think I know what I'm doing. So... at least that's what I tell my boss. So, it's like, the first thing I did was I loaded SB settings and turned SSH off.
Yeah.
It's like, no, you're not getting in my phone unless I want you in my phone. Mm-hmm. And, some of these repos that a buddy of mine set me up with, they're hardcore piracy repos. So it's like, well, I'm not sure I actually want to be running this code because that's, in the PC world, anyways, that's where all the viruses are. They're on the piracy and the porn sites. So, and I'm fairly certain that's a reason a lot of people buy an iPad is to look at the porn sites without getting the viruses. So,
yeah. Yeah. And we talked earlier, you know, I reboot my phone daily. It's because I have the freaking Samsung, you know, touch with interface, and it's just, or the Sense, all these freaking, you know, second layers that they put on top of their phone to make them unique are just horrendous, you know, and
you know, the TouchWiz isn't too bad. I actually like it better than like Android 1.6, I guess. But
I think that's a little bit like saying, you know, you like you like the what's it called, the LightStep interface that they throw on some Windows machines better than Windows 3.1. Or the DOS prompt.
Okay, this is a good point.
But well, like, Windows 95 better than Vista.
I use that TouchWiz interface though, and I personally have no complaints about it. There's nothing I've wanted to do that I haven't been able to, and nothing's really been getting in my way and making it feel awkward or anything like that. Now, I'm not opposed to changing it and rooting and everything like that. I just haven't found a reason to yet.
I just find that it gets laggy once you start trying to do a lot of different things at once on your phone. And I'm looking forward to, because basically, you know, WebOS is a beautifully functional interface on really shitty hardware with limited apps. But the guy who did that really cool looking interface is working on Ice Cream Sandwich, which is the next big release and unified release for Android. It's going to work on all their devices.
Who the hell is coming up with these Android release names?
It's in alphabetical order. They've got to, you know, keep with the theme.
Sandwich.
Oh, okay.
Spaghetti.
I've got a Honeycomb tablet, and I got to say that the 3.0 interface is just really sharp. Orders of magnitude better than 2.2.
Well, okay. Back on the subject of jailbreaking and rooting, do we really think... I would be very tempted to say, if you don't know what you're doing, and if you have to ask, you don't. Don't jailbreak your stuff.
In order to know, you do. So if you know what you're doing, you ask.
You know what? You never learn if you don't get your hands dirty. So I say, even if you don't know, do it. Go get a bunch of malware on there, get it all fucked up, and then fix it.
Until you get the credit card
bill.
You'll
know a lot more for it. Yeah.
Well, and I would say this. If you're a year into your phone service, wait a year,
and then
when you're done with it and you get your new phone, your brand spanking new phone, you go back to the old one, and that's the one you clean.
Oh, wow.
You make a separate, you know, login for it, and then you go and play around with it, and you break it, and then there's nothing valuable on there. Because a lot of people do their e-commerce on their phones or other, you know, their login and password for various social networks, those types of things. It's a big vulnerability. So I'd say be damn careful if you don't know what you're doing. If you're not the kind of person that has a separate username and password basis for logging in from your mobile, then don't do it, because you're going to get hacked.
And you know, you guys might disagree with me, but I personally, I know it makes it more of a pain in the ass, but I always tell my phone not to remember passwords for anything I'm logging into, just because it's a physical device that's very easy to get lost. And, you know, you lose that and you've got like your, let's say your Gmail login or something like that logged in. Because, you know, Android, Gmail, closely linked. But all of a sudden that gives them into your email, which can go to like PayPal and reset your password, all this other sort of crap. So it's definitely not recommended.
That's certainly the best practice, I would think, is to not have the phone remember your passwords. And I know people who that's bitten them in the ass, but at the same time, at least for me, I've got to have my phone remembering my password, because I need it to beep at me when I get emails. It's a trade-off and it sucks.
Yeah. So as long as you got a good piece of software on there to like remotely wipe it and stuff like that,
you got to hope they don't pull the SIM card. If professional phone thieves, they'll pull that SIM card the moment they get it, because they know what.
Oh yeah, absolutely. But it's an added layer of security.
Have it wipe it on its own when the SIM card is pulled.
But like you said yourself, no security is perfect. There's always going to be holes, but it can always be better.
That's true.
And to all the gray beards out there who were, you know, back in the 70s and 80s saying Unix is going to take over the world, guess what? It has. That's what's on our mobile phones. That's on our tablets. That's what's taking over the world. That's the new exciting thing.
Well, that is true. You know, Android is based on a Linux kernel. The Mac.
I'm going to say it's not the new exciting thing. It's the new boring thing.
The new boring thing. Well, yeah, because iOS is based on BSD.
It's not a big deal, man.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's based on Darwin, and Darwin is based on BSD. Anyways, there's BSD in there somewhere, and you know, iOS or Android is, of course, based on Linux. And I'm repeating myself because I thought the call dropped, and I think it was just Suave though. Suave, you back?
Yeah, I'm back.
Okay. So, anyways, I think it's time to close it out here. We're coming up on time, and we've nailed every topic to death. And I have to stop you guys, because otherwise we'll be talking about cell phones till the end of time. So,
yeah, whenever we bring that up, it just ends the show out on phones.
Are we going to make some announcements, as it were, before we end this one out?
Well, that's why I added a promos section to the show notes, Heavy, so if you want to take that, go right ahead.
That'd be great, man. All right, so guys, I want everybody to come on, and you're just going to have to be pretty diligent about it Thursdays or Friday nights, and just check on the stream and listen to it if you're really interested. RU has a brand new open mic show, Open Mic Fridays, and he'll, once he's on there, he'll let everybody know
how
he's doing
it. I'm not sure it's actually on Fridays, but whatever.
Once he figures out what time it's at himself,
we'll rename
just
it.
Just constantly listen to the stream, and then you're all set.
There you go.
And then, of course, our flagship show, I Have Nothing, is every Saturday, Sunday. And we've been having, once we've gotten back into Second Life, it's shittier sound. It's less stable.
It's
we
shittier.
Have gotten more people.
We're back in Second Life, and it sounds like shit.
Look how wrong we are.
Yeah.
Or agree with that.
And then, of course, we got our buddy News Yugo Sakichuan, who's basically taken over Newsreel on Thursdays, and it's been going good. It's just starting out, and they're starting to find their footing, and they're starting to get in their voice. They're doing a really good job. I'd say get out there, support these guys. You can come into Second Life at the old Newsreel stage and listen to them, and then get out there and download the shows and do
Who,
some response.
Who's his co-host? It's Hero in Second Life, but what's
Or Inoko, I think it was, or something like. I'm forgetting the name.
He had a different handle. I think it was one of the guys from ROTV with him, and I'm blanking on it. And he said it, and I feel bad for blanking, because I've talked to the guy before, and I'm sitting there going, "Oh God, I know this. I should know this. I'm sorry. Don't kill me." And of course, always check out the Galaxy 15 site, galaxy15radio.com. Our Twitter handle, galaxy15radio, which I forgot to tweet the show again. Yay! So the Twitter is not quite as important as the site. And of course, anybody else got stuff they want to plug?
Sure. You can find me at Heavy Metal on Twitter, and you can also find me at Heavy Metal, HAEVY, misspelled it, of course, on Google Plus, which is absolutely an amazing technology as far as it basically replaces Facebook and Twitter in one setting.
I do like how Google lies and claims it doesn't know your name and address when you're signing up for your account, though.
On my...
Go ahead, Knox.
On my YouTube channel, I've finished uploading the Escapecraft 3 videos, and we'll be starting to upload New Vegas videos soon.
Awesome.
Awesome.
Suave, you got anything?
Suave.
No, I've got nothing to plug. I'd plug my website, but it hasn't been updated in like a year, so I'm not going to subject anyone to that one.
All right. Well, that's enough, circle jerking there for one night. I'm going to close it out with... the Broken Kites track Method. So let me just mute the Skype call here so we don't hear Darth Vader there going nuts. Actually, he wasn't that bad this show. So, and we'll mute myself and start the music. We'll be right back.
And as our data clearly shows, humans cannot be trusted.